again, everybody. It's time for the Mainland Podcast. We're at episode number 123. My name's Michael Citro. I'm the founder and managing editor of themainland.com, covering Orlando City and Orlando Pride. Joining me, as always, David Rowe up in Tallahassee. How are you?
I'm doing well, sir. It was a good month for me at my real job, and so that always makes doing this a lot more fun. Plus, anytime that we can count all the wins on a hand with no losses, that's I like that.
Yes, and I would like to go to a second hand with that count.
Let's do it.
So, as you just alluded to, five wins on the bounce now for Orlando City, going out to Colorado in that thin Rocky Mountain air, taking on the Pids, the Rapids, that is, and falling behind early, but coming back to win in, you know, just kind of ho-hum cardiac cat fashion. 2-1 victory for the good guys in purple, in white with purple trim, as the case was this past weekend up in Dick's Sporting Goods Park. Really nice contingent of traveling supporters, more than 200 in the supporter section alone, plus a good mix of purple shirts throughout the crowd. So a very nice turnout for Orlando City in the visiting stands and all throughout Dick's Sporting Goods Park, and tremendous voice, because you could hear them doing the Vamos Orlando chant during the game. They were drowning out the local Colorado supporters group, so just a tremendous showing by them, and also by the team going behind early. We mentioned last week on the program that taking on the altitude was going to be a key matchup in the game, and Orlando City did look like they were a step slow out of the gate for at least the first 5 or 6 minutes. I don't even think the ball left the defensive third of Orlando City. It was starting to be one of those games where I thought, are we going to get any touches in the attacking half today? And eventually the game opened up a little bit, but then a ball over the top, about the 26th minute mark, if I recall correctly, finds Dominique Badji. Of course, we cannot find an actual good view of this play that shows that it was onside or not. And the two center backs for Orlando City seemed pretty convinced it was not onside, but Badji gets in behind. Bendik was not able to get out in time to snuff out the danger. And Badji, with a credit to him, he slotted a ball just inside the far post. So a good shot to beat Joe Bendik, and it ended the no goals in the run of play streak at about 3.5 games and about another 26 minutes. So that was unfortunate, and again, there was no really clear view of it, and I don't know if they had other camera angles, but it never went to a video review. So either they didn't have a proper angle to look at it, or the VAR in the booth decided that it didn't need another look. The thing about that play, Dave, to me that stood out was that Sané put his arm up and Tarek put his arm up, and it looked like Tarek was deeper than Sané. So it looked like maybe if anybody kept him on, it might have been Tarek. But the other thing that struck me is that Sané lifted his arm and then basically kind of gave the get out of here wave at the AR instead of running his ass back and trying to break up that play. And not sure if he could have caught Badji with his speed, but it would have been nice to have seen the effort to do so. So that was kind of disappointing, and in an otherwise good match for Lamine Sané.
Yeah, it was. You're right. I don't know if that was onsides or offsides. Like you said, we got no good look at it. But things like that, this is soccer. Things like that happen. Sometimes you get the call, sometimes you don't. Sometimes it's right, sometimes it's wrong. Even with the new video assisted stuff, things are still going to get passed. If indeed it did get passed. We don't know. We didn't get to see a good look at it. It could have been onsides. Regardless, like you said, Badji made a good shot to put them up, which was, we talked about The best chance that the Lions had was to get out there, and I believe you said it, get a goal early, because later on they were going to get tired. So, you know, let's get on the board first. And this was the exact opposite of that. We were a little slow to start, like you said. I think they did start to settle in even before that goal.
Yeah, just a bit.
But they had started to settle in to the game. They weren't looking as outpaced or anything like that. And after the goal, I felt that they really, I don't know if it was just that they continued to settle into the game or if the goal galvanized them. But afterwards, they looked pretty good to me for the remainder of the half. And I was still worried because, of course, you're down a goal on the road, which is never ideal, at altitude, which is worse. And so you had to wonder, okay, are they going to be able to do anything?
Yeah, it was definitely worrying for me because I thought just what I said couldn't happen, and it happened. And the thing is, you really have to get that goal back by the hour mark, or you're really going to be hurting, because that's what the players say across the league. They go there, and you kind of, I mean, Mohamed El-Munir said that the team felt like he couldn't breathe for the first 15 minutes, and then he settled into the game. But what I've been told by many players is that when you go there, that about the hour mark to 70-minute mark, that's when you really start to just hit a wall. And then you just, your body's not obeying what you're telling it to do and things like that. And it's like, I mean, it's like anything else. It's like any other kind of exhaustion. You're not, you know, even if your mind thinks it's going in regular speed, it's not. And even if your mind's going at regular speed, it can't make your body go at regular speed. So it's a dangerous situation to fall behind there. And that's that was an unfortunate. I'll give him a loaf there. Sané had a little bit of a loaf, because I think he's a quick guy. He may have been able to recover and maybe bother Badji enough to make him fire a little bit off target. And it would have only taken just a slight bit of aim being off for that to maybe slip wide of the post. But I'm going to give Sané a break, because every single defensive player and every center back in MLS will get beat trying to keep a player off, you know, offside this year. Every single one. Every center back gets beat. And in this case, both Tarek and Sané got beat. And I've seen a lot of people complaining about Sané online. But the other thing he did in that game that was notable was a bad back pass. When he had Will Johnson open, he tried to go back to Bendik, and it resulted in a near scoring chance for Colorado. And that was a bad play. But if you look at Sané's overall body of work, 88% passing accuracy. He created a chance. He was his usual self in the air with 6 clearances, 4 tackles, 3 interceptions. He was the team leader in all 3 categories. Blocked a shot. He did his job. I mean, for the most part, he did his job and he did it well. But he did have a couple of bad moments. And again, this is MLS. Every center back's going to have some bad moments in a game.
Well, it's one of those things where the good things and the bad things are what stick out, not the everyday doing your job things.
Right.
We've talked about this in relation to, like, Will Johnson. People were, oh, he's not that great. Yeah, but he did his job. He did it well. You didn't hear anything about him because he was doing his job. Same thing with Sané. He did the job most of the time. This particular time, we saw 2 bad things, or 1 bad thing if it was actually offsides. Mm-hmm. And so that's what people will focus on rather than, like you said, the entire body of work. I think looking at the entire team that night, if you go and actually look at the stats or go back and rewatch the game, filter out those, you know, 1 or 2 either really high or really low things. And overall, I thought they played really well, including Lamine.
Yes, absolutely. So as you mentioned, about the 30th minute, maybe a few minutes earlier, Orlando really seemed to turn the game around and really have more of the play, the better play, the better possession. Ended up getting out of the half with more possession than Colorado, better passing than Colorado percentage-wise, but they were down 1-0. Late in the half, really excellent opportunity set up by Chris Mueller. He floated a pass over Zach McMath that looked like Dom was just going to dunk it in with his head, and he gets undercut by the defender there, and that was, to me, a foul. And it did not get called. And so there was no penalty given in that situation, but it was a clear undercut in the box. I mean, it was a denial of a goal scoring opportunity, and you can't generally that undercut gets called all over the field. So if it's a foul everywhere else, it's got to be a foul in the box. Then at the other end, maybe it evened out. There was a whiff of a handball on Sané in the box. At the other end, I couldn't really get a clear look on my replays as to whether it actually hit his hand. And then, you know, there's the old was his hand in an unnatural position? Did he gain an advantage by it? That kind of thing. So I'm not really sure how that was viewed, but it didn't warrant anything on either end. So maybe they were awash, maybe they weren't. I didn't care much for the official in this game, mostly because I thought he was letting a lot of really hard physical stuff go, which was basically one-way traffic. Colorado was being extremely physical, especially with Chris Mueller, and especially in the midfield as well, with Yotun and some of the midfielders. They were really roughing guys up. And in the second half, we saw the yellow cards start to fly, but you thought, man, if they could have given a few of those in the first half, this really could have flipped the game. But 1-0 lead for the Pids at the half. And then Orlando came out of the break and just continued to build on how they played to close out the first half. And eventually the deadlock broken, a ball into the penalty area, bouncing around. Enzo Martinez tries to clear it with a bicycle kick, only as far as Sasha Kljestan, who, of course, instead of shooting, finds the most perfectly open person in the area, and it's Christian Aguita. And my thought at that point is, why did you pass to Christian Aguita? But then,
like, no.
But the Colombian answered that with an emphatic, this is why, and rocketed one into the upper 90 for only his third career goal, Dave, and it was 1-1.
It was and quite a goal it was. I've rewatched it many times. He took that on the right foot up in the upper right corner. No chance for the goalie on that one. It was pictured as probably the best goal he's ever had. Hopefully it's not the best goal he'll ever have, but certainly it was a thing of beauty. And like you said, Sasha doing what Sasha does, which is getting an assist and doing it in the most, there's a guy here you go, you take the shot. 1-1. It's the 200 plus that are there are going absolutely crazy. And I know if you were thinking what I was, which you probably were, because we talked about this last week, I was sitting there going, well, I'm glad that happened, a little unexpected. Especially given, like you said, the amount of physicalness of the match up to that point. Speaking to Chris Mueller, for those who are worried that, maybe he hit a wall or, wasn't quite up to snuff as he'd spent the last few games, they were all over him all game. I almost feel like they were determined that Chris Mueller was not going to keep his streak going. And I feel a bit the same in regards to Dom, including that undercutting him in the box. When you've got two guys on hot streaks like that, as a defensive team, you're going to focus on those guys because they're the ones that have been scoring goals. So there's no doubt that prior to that game, part of the preparation is stay on Mueller, stay on Dwyer, make sure that they don't get a good foot or a good head on that ball.
Yeah, I was very surprised to see the person who put Orlando City up, but we've been getting so much from Dom and from Chris Mueller the last few games. It was bound to be somebody else having a turn, and it was Christian Aguita's turn. It was a great goal. It's up for goal of the week. So kudos to Christian for not only putting in another great shift on the defensive end, but also adding some offense to his arsenal. He played another great game, and Jason Christ said after the match that Higuita had been a little sluggish, a little under the weather all week, maybe dealing with some severe allergy issues. And And that's one of the reasons why he came off when he did, with a lot of people kind of scratched their head and said, why is he coming off? He's playing well. But that's why, because he was maybe not 100% and still managed to put in a really great shift for Orlando. So the Colombian, I think it's great that he's coming around and starting to blossom into that player that we've been waiting for him to become. He's shown signs of it. He's shown flashes of it, just like his countryman Carlos Rivas did for 3 years. But now he seems to have put – this is his best three-game stretch in a row together of his career so far, I got to think.
By far. And when you look back on the match and you look back on that goal that he scored, if you are honest – you say, I'm surprised, but by the same token, you should be able to go, well, I shouldn't be. Something has clicked with him. He is playing at a different level than he was before. Mostly, obviously, it's been in the defensive end and, you know, keeping things, being that defensive midfielder that we hope he could be. But this is a team that, you know, plays as a team. They're going to attack as a team. There's no reason to think that he couldn't get a goal. So it's very happy for him to get that one, and most importantly, to even things up at that point. So it's one of those things where at the time, like you, I'm like, no, no, no. And then I'm like, yes, yes, yes. So I'll take it. And if he keeps playing, if he scores no more goals this year, but he keeps playing defensively how he's been, I'll be extremely happy.
Well, history's not on the side of more goals since he has 3 in his 4-year career, but you never know.
I didn't think I was going out on a limb there.
Anyway, it was good to see him score, because earlier in the second half, just a few minutes after the restart, Justin Mirren got absolutely robbed of a freaking cannon shot from distance that went. McMath got a piece of and it hit off the post and stayed out to continue Justin Mirren's snake-bitten goal-scoring season so far. But Justin Mirren was very active throughout the game. I thought he played very well. Mm-hmm. He you know, out on the wing, passing at an 84% clip, not a bad game there. But also, you know, he gave Kolesjian a pass that should have been an assist. Kolesjian shot it right at the keeper. He had the entire net, both left and right, to shoot at. Yep. Anyway, right down Main Street, right at McMath. But then a little mirror of magic late in the game, as we started to get toward the last quarter of an hour, and you started to think, well, maybe a point on the road isn't so bad at altitude. But the slick back heel to send Yoshi into the box. Yoshi
that
gets
beautiful.
Clipped by Dylan Serna in the leg as he's trying to break in, which would have been a 2-on-1 with, I believe, Dwyer. And so the referee did not hesitate, pointed right at the spot. It was a clear penalty, and Yoshi Mario Toon took it himself and sent McMath the wrong way. Not that it would have mattered, because where he placed it and with as much power as he placed it, no goalie was stopping that, and it was 2-1.
Yeah, McMath got one ridiculous save in that game. He wasn't going to get two, even if he had gone the right direction. On that first one, I feel like maybe Yoda was out there helping him with the force or something. And then on the PK, yeah, that was going in textbook from Yoshi. But like you said, that little, you know, heel kick back to Yoshi into the box was an absolute thing of beauty. And no doubt that it was a penalty. And at that point, you know, at that point in the game, you're up 2-1 out of nowhere.
Yep, and just 13 minutes to play at that point.
Yeah, and so now the worry becomes what we've been talking about the whole time is, do they have the legs to hold on?
Yeah, and it was apparent that the proverbial wall was hit, because it really was only a minute or two after the goal where Colorado started to really assert itself in the attacking third even, and the Rapids continued to send wave after wave of attack forward, and they kind of tilted the game the other way in terms of, at that point, Orlando City was up in every category, including shots. But Colorado got a bunch of shots there at the end, a bunch of corner kicks, and you know people are saying, well, why are they giving away? Why can't they maintain possession? It's the thing I talked about before, folks. It's the fatigue of playing at altitude. Your body isn't behaving. Joe Bendick gets the ball on his foot and tries to blast it down the field, and it goes, takes a right turn and goes out of bounds for a Colorado throw. That's him not being able to control it. The same thing with the, you know, there was like one brief moment of great holdup play in that last sequence, in that last 13 minutes, when they sent the ball forward and Dom did a great job to hold it up, passed it off, and they ended up with a free kick out of it. In a pretty decent spot. They didn't really make anything of the free kick, but that was the one brief moment where they kind of caught their breath for a second and they were able to actually execute a few things in a row. But, you know, in the end, even with 6 minutes of added time, which was just devastating to see that number go up, knowing that they were already exhausted and just under so much fire, they were able to, you know, stay resolute, defend heroically, and you know, a lot of people will point to the Mohamed El-Munir sliding block out of nowhere in the 94th minute, I think it was. But then a lot of people will forget that El-Munir made that mess by allowing Dylan Cerna to run inside of him. So it was a good thing that he was able to make up for his mistake and save the day. So at the end of the game, 2-1 to the visitors, and a big celebration for the Lions in front of their fans, and you know, did the thing where they hold hands and run toward their fans, and this time on the road. So 5 wins in a row, Dave, and I need your man of the match.
You know, this is a well, it's not that tough, but it was a bit tough. Like I said earlier, everybody had a pretty good game. You know, a lot of people would argue for El-Munir just for saving that that last one to keep the win. Obviously, Justin Merrim had an excellent game. If you go and look at the passing numbers for the whole squad, they were all good. But for me, it's going to have to be Yoshimar Yotun. He did what he does every game, and on top of that, was able to get the foul, get the PK, put the Lions up, and so he wins my man of the match.
Yeah, Yotun, a disgusting stat line, 96.4% passing accuracy. He had the second most touches on the team, 75, which was rare. He usually has the most. El-Munir had 86, which is a shockingly high number for a fullback. And then Yoshi had 2 shots, 1 on goal, obviously the goal. He had a chance created. And just on and on and on. He had a tackle. He had 3 interceptions to tie Sané for the team lead. Just a great game for the Peruvian. And certainly the best part of it is he did not get booked. So he did not get suspended next week.
Indeed.
He's got 2 more games. If he can go cleanly through the next 2 games, he gets one of his yellow cards removed for good behavior. And then he'll be back down to 3. El-Munir was also amazing. 4 aerials won, and he's not a big guy. So he was really tested throughout the game. They tried to go high, cross it in. He was equal to the task. He also had 3 tackles, 2 interceptions. He blocked a shot, obviously the most important one at the end. He passed very well. As you know, he didn't have too many of those scary moments that he sometimes has. He seemed to make the right decisions in the final third, you know, didn't dribble into blind alleys and stuff like that. So, and it looks like he and Merrim are becoming more comfortable together on that side. I'm going to give Mo my man of the match, even though I can't argue against Yotun. And I also thought that Christian Aguita had a phenomenal match as well.
Those were the 3 that I was having to choose from also.
Good to see also Uri Rossell get on the pitch for 23 minutes, his most so far in his 2 outings. And he actually was able to get into the game a little bit. He passed, you know, for a guy that's only been on the field less than a half hour with his teammates, 86% passing is not too shabby. He completed 1 of his 2 long balls and 2 tackles in a very brief spurt of play. So good job by Uri, and it's good to see him back on the pitch.
Absolutely. We've been, you know, waiting for him to have that impact. And of course, what's happened in the meantime while we were waiting for him is Higuita and some others have stepped up and started playing really well. So it's been a, well, you know, a little bit of a embarrassment of riches in that midfield, which is a good thing for those of you who are wondering. So there is no doubt that we are going to get to see more of Rozelle going forward. So don't worry. You know, as more time goes by, as he gets more practice, we will see more of him. And like you said, if he's getting 84% or so with not a ton of time, well, hopefully that'll keep up once he does and once he is in the games for more minutes.
Yeah, not going to be a guy who's as quite as flashy in either direction as Yotun and Higuita are. He's not a cruncher like Higuita defensively. He's not got quite the offensive attacking flair in tight spaces that Yotun has. Kind of an in between those two guys sort of player, and I think that's I think that will bode well for Orlando City, because it means he can play with either of those guys in a two-man midfield. So welcome back, Oriol Rossell. Dave, there was another game this weekend, and that involved the Orlando Pride, and we got to welcome back a lot of international stars to the lineup.
Thank goodness.
And it was good to see even a very tired-looking Marta out there, and Alana Kennedy, and it was you know, it was one of those games against the rain where it just seems like it doesn't matter how many chances you get to score. Michelle Batos is making saves. You're missing, you know, missing opportunities just wide. But Batos made two really good saves in the first half, one on Alana Kennedy and one on Alex Morgan. But, you know, she kept her team in the game. And then a mistake by Ashlyn Harris, quite frankly, led to the first goal. She decided to punch instead of catching a ball that was looked utterly catchable. It didn't go very far. Christine Nairn tried her best to clear it on the fly, which is always a hard thing to do. It didn't leave completely. And then, you know, Allie Long was able to score a goal and put Seattle ahead, and then the Pride were chasing the game. They were able to come back on an unbelievable free kick from Marta. She is an amazing player to watch, even when she's only half of her normal self. And, you know, having traveled back from, you know, the Copa America Femenina and only getting in two training sessions, and you know, she was probably still feeling the effects of all the travel and the tournament that she had just come out of, and she definitely looked slow and sluggish and was constantly triple teamed, and yet she still really sort of controlled the match for the Pride.
Well, as she's wont to do, I mean, that's what she does. So it's like you said, despite being tired, that's not something that I think of as a surprise. It's who she is, and I'm just glad she's back doing it, honestly. So it was unfortunate that Ashlyn, you know, took that ball and punched it rather than, like you say, catching it. But those things, it's soccer. Those things are going to happen. And fortunately, you know, we weren't down all the Australians and Brazilians, and so we had more bodies to throw at this game to try and, you know, make the best of a bad situation.
Yeah, sort of an in-between lineup. Not everybody played that you would expect, but, you know, it was good to see, you know, some of the new players. In fact, we got to see Emily Van Egmond in the second half, and I thought she really brought a tremendous vision to the pitch that was missing. She was able to thread balls into areas where, you know, that's been lacking in the midfield for the Pride this season. You know, with all the midfielders that the quality in the midfield that was missing, we're talking about not only Van Egmond, but Marta and Alana Kennedy. You know, this is a player, an Australian international, who has very good vision on the field. She can put the ball into places where you're not sure that it'll fit, but then it fits and it's perfectly weighted for the player to run onto. And considering that was her first half of action with her new team, and she had had, I want to say four training sessions with the club, she did a great job. I mean, that was just a sign of what Emily Van Egmond will be bringing to this team this year.
Yeah, it was, like you said, getting to see that is, we've brought in so many players, there's been so much change on both squads, and as crowded as one might think that midfield is with, you know, Marta, it's, you can never have too many good quality players. So having Van Engman out there, and hopefully as she gets more time with the team, we'll get even better. And if that's the case, which I fully expect, that's only good things going forward. It wasn't a perfect game, but then again, it was the first game where everybody was back. So, mm-hmm. you know, expecting them to play like a team that's been playing together for a few weeks, that's not something that one would think is going to happen.
Yeah, a little disappointing not to get the three. There were some opportunities to get goals that didn't materialize. Again, Betos with a couple of really good saves. Morgan had four chances created. She was really on her game from a passing perspective. But it was really not one of those games where, you know, there weren't a lot of good clear-cut opportunities. I think Seattle plays pretty good defense on the road. Mm-hmm. They tend to... you know, be physical, and they tend to play hard, and it was a pretty good outing for their back line and their goalkeeper. The really interesting thing to me, though, was that Allie Krieger playing right back, you wondered, you know, how she would fare against the quickness and the quality of former Pride fullback Steph Catley, but Steph Catley was extremely quiet in that game. So kudos to Krieger for doing a good job on her.
Well, Krieger is... you know, one of the best of all time back there on that right back. So, you know, yes, is she getting older than some of those other ones? Is she is not as speedy? Okay, fine. But her soccer acumen and vision are not diminished. As a matter of fact, her experience lends, you know, her the ability to not have to run as far in certain cases. And so we're lucky to have somebody back there with that experience, especially since, you know, some of the other people on the back line, your pickets are not quite as old Presley. So for them to be able to learn from her is a benefit that's going to serve the Pride in the years to come.
Yes, and the Pride will get a quick turnaround, a Wednesday night game against the Chicago Red Stars on the road. I believe four consecutive on the road for the Pride, if I'm remembering correctly. So, you know, this will be it'll be a difficult section of the schedule, and this is the section of the schedule that Orlando really has to be careful to try to pick up some points, even if they're just draws, to stay in the race, so that when they get the bulk of some home games later in the season, they're able to make up some ground. And that's going to be very important to watch. But, Dave, do you have a player of the match for the Seattle Reign at the Orlando Pride?
For me, it's going to have to be the best women's player to ever play this game. That's Marta. If for nothing else than that phenomenal free kick strike. It was a absolute thing of beauty, a total golazo. And if you haven't seen if you're not following Christine Nairn on Twitter, go do it. There's somebody put out there where they, because Nairn is standing out there with Marta, and they do this slow motion zoom in on Nairn's face as she watches Marta take this kick, and it's absolutely priceless. But you know, not just for the kick, obviously, you know, Marta, she's always going to create chances, create havoc, draw players to her. So despite Alex having plenty of shots and opportunities, you know, I think Betos did a good job in goal for the Reign, and that made it tough on the Pride. We maybe should have come away with a win, but regardless, for that, you know, for getting that goal, I've got to give it to Marta.
Yeah, for me, there were a lot of performances that were kind of in a similar sort of area that were in terms of scoring them, and it was really a few players that I thought were kind of equal. I thought Kennedy played very well. I mean, Krieger, I think, played very well. Kennedy also played very well in that midfield. Mm-hmm. Alex, her movement was really good. I would like to see her put that one that Beto saved it was a one-timer. I'd like her to see her put that a little closer to the post. I think that's in. But Again, Marta probably was the most influential player on the pitch, and so she will also be my player of the match. And she got robbed for NWSL Goal of the Week.
Unfortunately,
because
yeah.
Because Tobin Heath won it for a little chip over the goalkeeper, which really, it's cute, but it's not the golazo that Marta scored from distance on a free kick. So the unsavable free kick wins in my estimation. But again, I'm biased, so what?
Yeah, we're biased, but I don't think we're wrong.
Yeah. So anyway, big news going into Wednesday's game. Of course, this drops on Wednesday if you're getting it when it first comes out. You know, the big news for the Pride, questionable for the game. Alex Morgan with a hyperextended knee. I can even recall the play that she did it when she was trying to get down into the box. And you could see she went down. It took her kind of a minute to get up. She is questionable. Also questionable, Ashlyn Harris with a hyperextended elbow. So those two players from the U.S. Women's National Team may or may not be in the lineup Wednesday night against Chicago. Now, it's not a situation where you say, well, maybe they rest them and play on a weekend, because they're not playing on the weekend. They have a week off till another midweek game next week.
And that makes a difference.
Yeah, so they can go ahead and play. I think if they're... As long as they don't have anything swollen, I think they're both playing in that game. So we'll see what Tom Sermani does. But, you know, it'll all depend on how they are. I'm imagining both game day decisions. So that's something to watch for. Also, Ashlyn was reviewed by the NWSL Disciplinary Committee for a play that happened sort of, I think, when maybe the whistle had blown for, I think, maybe Jessica Fishlock getting hurt.
Yes.
And so the referee stopped play, but the ball, they kept playing. Jody Taylor came in, and Ashlyn got there and got the ball, and then they collided, and Ashlyn sort of got tangled with her. And it looks like she threw her down. Was there intent there? I don't know. But they reviewed the play, and there's no disciplinary action coming. So they have determined that they don't see any intent in that. So she will not be suspended, which is good. But you know what? Haley Kottmeyer's a good goalkeeper anyway. So I think in the end, probably doesn't matter.
No. And I watched that that thing that they reviewed where they're, you know, people who were against the Pride will say she threw her onto the ground. It looked more to me like, you know, when one of my kids used to come run up and I'd kind of, you know, catch them and then just kind of let them down to the ground without making sure they didn't get hurt. You know, she didn't even look as she was doing it. And you really have to go watch it. It's incredibly hard to explain, but she wasn't even looking down as she did it. Like, you know, it was we're entangled. I'm going to let you go now. She falls to the ground. Harris moves on. So I agree with the review. There didn't seem to be any ill intent there. Mm-hmm. And I think they made a good no call on suspension.
Yeah. I didn't even think about that actually with the, you're right though, that, you know, it would have been a different look if she had like sort of postured mm-hmm. over her and get, you know, gave her some lip or something afterwards, you know, that kind of thing. Yep. And certainly it didn't seem like that. But the weird thing was that I had to watch the game on the Go 90 and I didn't see that. It wasn't shown. It was shown in their broadcast at the end of the broadcast in like this montage of scenes from the game. And it was like, where did that come from? When did that happen?
Yeah.
And it was very odd. But in fact, our Scott Carnival was at the game and covering the game, and he didn't see it because he was looking back to see, you know, what the stoppage was about and that kind of thing. So he didn't even see it happen either. So anyway, no suspension, no harm, no foul. We can all move on.
Much ado about nothing.
Yeah. So, you know. Good job. Orlando actually got a break from a disciplinary committee. That never happens.
Well, it's the Pride, so that's why.
Yeah. Maybe they're just afraid of Ashland's fans.
Hey, you know what? I'd be afraid of Ashland.
Yeah, maybe it was that. Who knows? But again, the Pride in action against the Red Stars. This is a team, Dave, that has given Orlando problems in the past, especially in Chicago. Very few goals scored against that team by Orlando, and Orlando is having trouble scoring goals this year, so that's not a good combination of things going into Wednesday. And oh yeah,
it is worrisome. Yes,
they also have Sam Kerr now.
Yeah. And we're potentially without Alex Morgan.
Potentially without Alex Morgan, yes. So
Sydney LaRue, time to step up.
Yeah, Sid had maybe her quietest game yet on the weekend. So maybe she will step up and have a good game. Who knows? I'm anxious to see what Tom does for squad rotation. So yeah. It's coming back on a short week, but Chi Abogagu got half the game off. Emily Van Eggman played her first half of a game. The Australians and Brazilians will actually be more rested than they were, which is hard to believe. So, you know, Poliana didn't even dress for the game over the weekend, so she's probably a good bet to be rested and fit and ready to go. Carson Pickett didn't play. So I think you can read into that maybe that those two fullbacks will play there. Maybe Krieger and Monica play inside, or maybe one of them plays with Zadorsky. It's hard to tell what Tom's going to do, because we know this is his third year. He hasn't had a team this deep before to deal with.
Right. Talk about he's probably sitting there going, I don't know what to do with all of these people. This is fantastic.
Exactly.
Actually, he wouldn't have said it like that. He would have said it with an accent.
With a very nice Scottish brogue.
Scottish brogue, yeah. Yes. Talking to him is so great. It really is.
Tom Sermonti, I can honestly say, is a delight to talk to.
Absolutely.
He is an unbelievable guy. He pulled me aside. I mentioned at the She Believes Cup at the halftime of the first game, I went downstairs to look at the merchandise, and I hear my name, and I turn around, and Tom's calling me over. And we just sat there talking, and he is just an unbelievable guy. You can have the easiest guy in the world to talk to. You can talk to him about anything, any topic. He's just a good conversationalist. He's
incredibly
always
nice.
He's always genuinely interested in what you have to say.
Yes.
And I recommend, if you ever have an opportunity to go see him at one of these club events, go talk to him. It'll be worth it.
Late breakfast with Tom Sermonti is better than everything.
Yes. The brunch thing. I mean, that was tremendous. I wish I'd have gone to that. The mimosas with Tom.
That's I didn't find out until after the fact on our internal chat. If I had known, I might have taken a day off and driven down for that, because it would have been that good.
Yeah. Well, Dave, we'll be back to talk about the Pride next week, and we'll break down their game against Chicago. Hopefully a victory. But why don't we get to this week's guest? I'm very excited about this, because this is probably our most high profile guest maybe that we've ever had.
At least since I've been on, and that's been a while now. So yeah, I'd have to agree with you.
All right. Well, we'll do that now. We'll get to that interview right after this. All right. Joining us on the Mainland Podcast this week, very, very happy to have with us a professional soccer broadcaster, former player, guy who ran for U.S. soccer president. He wears a lot of hats. Kyle Martino, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me. It's so funny. When people ask me what I do, it's always a difficult answer. Nothing comes out quickly. There's no one title.
You do a lot of things, which is good. I think that a lot of us would do a lot of things if we could get paid for a lot of things.
I think they call it jack of all trades, master of none.
Here you go. We are definitely a master of no trades here on the Mainland Podcast. Kyle, I just wanted to start out by asking you about, you know, the last year that you've had. The U.S. Soccer Federation presidency came open, and there were, you know, a lot of really good candidates this time out, and you decided to throw your hat in the ring and give it a go. What kind of went into that decision, and how did that whole process go for you in terms of how you went through it, how you felt about it, and did you enjoy it?
The last one I definitely enjoyed it. I would do it again. It has its high points, its low points. It definitely was an ambitious thing that put stress on my family, but proved you know, proved worthy, and also just how incredible my wife and my family are for supporting me in something like that. I got in because I just wanted to be more than a mouthpiece. And, you know, I've from my pulpit have expressed concerns about U.S. soccer in the past. I've highlighted the good, the bad, and the ugly of the Federation and of the U.S. men's national team. And when I sat back and watched the field increase and people get involved, I just felt the time was now to step up with the other brave people who love this game so much and fight for it and fight for a better federation. And at the end of the day, it was an exciting, disappointing, scary, and empowering and exciting few months to see not only the machinery of the game in this country and all the wonderful people who were involved, but also see some of the negatives and some of the ugliness that's in our game that I think all of us stepping forward to raise the right questions and speak about the right issues, even though you know, some are worried that we aren't going to get the change that we desired. I think that we have shook the system and at this inflection point demanded more transparency and accountability. And I'm hopeful the outcome is that that momentum, that demand never goes away. And, you know, and the desires are heard and the fans and the members finally get a federation that serves everyone.
Well, now you mentioned not wanting to or wanting to step out from behind the pulpit. You know, obviously, you know, you have a mouthpiece, you know, being on TV. What, you know, given the results of the election, what are you planning to do to continue fighting and not just from, you know, behind a microphone?
Well, of course, I'll continue when, you know, when my job description asks for it to analyze not only the game, but the U.S. soccer system. Right now, I'm not asked to do that. So really, any of my analysis or criticism or praise of the Federation or the national teams is from a fan perspective. I'll always be a fan, and I'll continue to do that. From a more professional and formal standpoint, I've decided to take a position to chair Street Soccer USA, an incredible national nonprofit using soccer as a social vehicle to create social change in low-income communities in inner cities by bringing the greatest game on the planet to the people that need it most. And so I've been in touch with them for a while. I'm so impressed with the organization they've built over the last decade, and I'm honored and humbled. They've asked me to chair their national board to continue to build fields and bring programs to these inner cities so that we can really bring the fun back in the game. And for me, I think it's incredibly important to continue to build a pickup community, a place where it's not organized soccer, it's soccer for the fun of it. It's a ball and a bunch of friends just enjoying playing. And you know, continue to try and find ways outside of the current soccer pyramid that has so many barriers to entry to increase participation in these dense communities where there are incredible kids that want to play the game but just can't find it.
Kyle, what do you think will be sort of the focus of Carlos Cordero's presidency after he succeeded Sunil Gulati?
Well, it's clear his main focus is to win the World Cup bid, and that is an incredibly important part of the presidency and of the Federation of Soccer in this country right now. To go this summer, the votes will determine who gets to host the 2026 World Cup, and you know, I think it would be a force multiplier to have that tournament back in the U.S. For the first time since 1994. At a point where our soccer culture has grown, eyes will be even more on it than there have been in the past. The infrastructure is better. The fan base has grown. And, you know, just the excitement and the energy that will create and the money that it will bring in hopefully will be reinvested in the right way and will be you know, just a real seminal moment to continue to bring this game to the main stage, bring this game to the head table with the other major sports in this country. You know, I think you can walk and chew gum at the same time. So obviously it's important to make sure the bid with our partners, Mexico and Canada, is the best, is in a prime position to win and get the most votes and bring the World Cup back here. But at the same time, there are so many things that need to be fixed with the environment within U.S. soccer, the culture there. There isn't really an organization technically designed to make macro decisions that grow a soccer culture but also improve the development of players and performance of our team. And a lot of those things need to be fixed, and it remains to be seen if the right things are going to be done to do that.
Now, speaking of that, they announced recently that the search is on for a director prior to a new coach. Do you have any thoughts on if it was up to you, who you would put in that position, and what you see that position doing going forward?
Yeah, I had sounded out the people I wanted for that role while I was on the campaign trail. I'm not gonna throw names out because I'd prefer not to influence things. And some of the people I like have actually interviewed, so that's good to hear. The feedback from people that are interviewing for the position is that the role isn't really well defined, and the scope of the responsibilities is very narrow. So far the role isn't very attractive to the people qualified and capable to do it, which is worrying. You know, it's something that is definitely the right move, whether it's GMs, and this will be a GM for the men's national team and the women's national team, or a technical director. You know, it's very clear that people unqualified to make these decisions have done so in the past. So it's essential that they find a person or persons to go in and finally have the technical nous to make curriculum plans and coordinate and connect these national teams from the senior level to the youth level. And you know, so far they're searching but haven't been able to you know, to get someone signed up.
You know, to dovetail on that, Kyle, I'm not asking you to name who you would pick, but who are some of the names of after the GM is in place, who are some of the names that we can expect to hear come out in terms of coaching candidates? Because I think that's a thing that most fans are really interested in, is who's going to be that next coach.
Well, we've seen some names thrown out, whether it's internally with guys like Tad Ramos, who, you know, have been in the U.S. soccer structure and done a good job on the youth side. Major League Soccer, whether it's Peter Vermees or Greg Berhalter, Jesse Marsh, and some of the people who have succeeded at the professional level and would be ready for a leap to the international level, or international names. You know, David Wagner, who obviously is a U.S. men's national team, a former U.S. men's national team player who is in the middle of a really impressive run with not only getting Huddersfield promoted, but seems like he might be able to keep them up in the Premier League as well. You know, Tata Martino and, you know, Patrick Vieira, who's here. I mean, there are a lot of great options. You know, it's just really important that this time the decision is made in a democratic way with technical people in the room rather than a couple people making this decision like it was made in the past.
Bringing things back a little bit to the home front, you mentioned obviously getting soccer up into the stratosphere of the other major leagues in this country. Miguel Herrera recently said that he thought Liga MX was competing against the European leagues and not against MLS as far as the quality. He said that they were a step above. Had you heard that, and do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think you only have to look at the CONCACAF Champions League record and the fact that a U.S. team has never won. And the dominance with Liga MX is an example of, yeah, the quality is better in Liga MX. We have to admit that. Now, Toronto came as close and went toe-to-toe unlike I think any MLS team has in the past. But it's only recently that salaries within Major League Soccer's structure are commensurate with those of Liga MX. Here's the major difference. You know, some of the big earners for Major League Soccer are close to, or maybe even more than, some of the big earners for Liga MX teams. But, you know, player 1 to player 20, the salary budgets for Liga MX teams are definitely well above what Major League Soccer teams are paying. So, you know, you get what you pay for. And, you know, it's the middle of a roster that's the most important to make sure that you don't have a drop off in quality. So Major League Soccer continues to gain ground. But, you know, Liga MX, obviously the number one sport in their country. And if you think about the interest in our country as well, I mean, Liga MX is consumed probably more than Major League Soccer in our country when you think about all of, you know, Telemundo and Univision and all of the ratings domestically for that league. It's an incredible draw. And when Eltre comes to the U.S., they're an incredible draw. So it's just it's an amazing heritage, a long a league that's been around for a long time and are ahead of Major League Soccer. And I think it's okay to admit that.
You know, Kyle, one of the things that I, you know, enjoy about what you do is that you get paid to watch soccer games, and that's something I haven't really been able to pull off yet.
Sure, keep going.
So I guess my question here is, you know, with the opportunity to watch games from around the world, what really excites you as a soccer fan? Which leagues, which teams and players and what styles of play are really exciting you right now?
Well, you know, I feel very fortunate to have that job. I mean, every day it really is incredible. We sit in the studio, Rebecca and the Robbies, and we have so much fun doing it, and I love doing it with them. So I do feel so lucky to be able to watch soccer for a living. Sometimes my wife doesn't believe that when I say, you know, I'm working right now when I'm on the couch in sweatpants watching. Sometimes it doesn't pass as work, but I just love. Yeah, I've talked a lot about Pep Guardiola and what he's done with Manchester City. I just love the pursuit of perfection in total football. I mean, I grew up watching not only Barcelona, but also a lot of Serie A and watching Juventus and AC Milan. I tend to be attracted by star players and attacking players rather than follow teams. So followed Arsenal during the invincible years because Bergkamp and Henry, and it was just so incredible to watch that combination. Watched a lot of Boca Juniors because of Riquelme and Tevez and River Plate with Ortega. You know, my eye tends to be drawn to a team with flair, a league with flair. So, you know, La Liga has always been a league that I've followed from afar, even though I've never been paid to.
Well, talking about the younger players and whatnot, former Rookie of the Year yourself, have you had the opportunity to catch Orlando City's Chris Mueller and what he's been doing in these last few games?
Yeah, I mean, I just love I have, and I love players that take risk. I love young players that are given opportunities. You know, when I was at Columbus that rookie season, I didn't play a lot right away, and there was a star player in the midfield, a veteran named John Wilmar Perez, who played in a World Cup with Colombia, and he was the main man. And it took me a while to break into that team for the coach to trust me enough to play me over him. And once I got my first opportunity, I started the rest of the year and won Rookie of the Year. So I love coaches that allow players to express themselves and trust young players. It was I think Sir Matt Busby, the famous Manchester United coach, that said if they're good enough, they're old enough.
You know, Kyle, before we let you go, definitely want to get your thoughts on the World Cup. Give me your handicap on which teams we think might be lifting that trophy at the end of this thing.
Well, I'll give you a favorite and a dark horse. I wouldn't say there are a lot of people's favorites, but I really like France right now. Not without their imperfections or idiosyncrasies, but just a team that I think is incredibly talented that are going to perform really well in this tournament. A dark horse, I'll throw out Belgium. You know, still young, still unproven against some of the powerhouses, but a team absolutely packed with talent.
Well, Kyle, you're on NBC Sports. Any place? Let us know where you know our listeners know where else they can find you and where they can. You're a good follow on Twitter. Why don't you give us your Twitter handle as well?
Yeah, so I'm at Kyle Martino, and then also look into StreetSoccerUSA.org, an incredible organization. There are ways on the site to donate. There are also lists of some of our events that we have. We have one coming up July 14th in Times Square, where we're putting on a tournament all day long in the middle of Times Square. So a lot of cool things going on there.
That sounds outstanding. Thanks, Kyle, so much for being with us on the podcast, and best of luck to you with all of your endeavors.
All right. Thanks so much for having me on, guys.
Okay, Dave, we definitely want to thank Kyle Martino once again, because he was really great.
Absolutely. Like we said before, probably the biggest name, and certainly lived up to the hype in my mind when you told me earlier that that's who we were going to have on the show. So thank you very much to Kyle Martino. It was a pleasure talking to him.
And a big thanks to me for asking him to be on the show.
Yes. Here, allow me to do that. A big thanks to Michael Citro for setting that up for us. It was really, really good of him to do so. So thank you.
Beat my chest a little bit, puff it out. But no, that was good. And we're very appreciative of him sharing his time. He has a lot of different things going on in his career, in addition to having wife and kids. So, you know,
yeah,
it's a busy life for him. And we're happy he could, you know, share 15 or so minutes with us here on the podcast this week. So we are now in stoppage time for episode 123. And we've got some mailbag, Dave.
Yes, we do.
So I don't know if you have. Did you get anything from Mr. Johnson?
I do, because I'm going to give a shout out to Mr. Mark Johnson. He has now finished law school. So big round of applause for him.
Now you can join the blog.
That's right. Now he can join the blog. Of course, now he's going to tell us that he's got to study for the bar or some such stuff as that.
But, I've been to many bars, and I've never studied for it.
I've been to bars with Mark Johnson, and those type he doesn't need to study for, but maybe the other kind.
Okay.
Regardless, he did have a question for us. It's actually something that was somewhat addressed on the site this week, but who is going to replace Yoshi when he is off to the World Cup?
Well, that's a pretty easy one. He's just recently made his Orlando City debut, and that's Uri Rossell. And Rossell will take the bottom of the diamond if it's a 4-4-2, or he will play alongside Higuita in a 4-2-3-1, and that's really the best like-for-like that Orlando City has for replacing Yotun while he goes to the World Cup.
Yeah, and we mentioned it, or you mentioned it earlier, that the nice thing about Yuri is that he can play with either Yoshi or Higuita. And so when Yoshi is not here, he will play with Higuita. So there we have it. Yeah, it's not that we won't miss Mr. Yotun, because he does bring a lot to the club. But, you know, can't really fault the man for going off and playing in the World Cup. Fortunately, like you said, we'll have Yuri. All will be good.
Indeed. Are you sure? Are you sure we can't fault him? Okay.
well, we can, but, you know.
All right. So, anyhow, the questions we have here, we got one in the email, the old-fashioned way. Lee has emailed us again this week, and he would like to know, who do you foresee being tabbed to succeed Monsieur Wenger as manager at Lee's beloved Arsenal FC?
Oi. Wow. That's a no matter what happens, no matter who goes there, that's a phenomenal opportunity, and also a bit of a nightmare to start off on, because despite what happened recently, there was that stretch of time where Arsene had Arsenal doing phenomenal things. So as far as who, you know, the one name that I've heard is Patrick Vieira, and of course, former Arsenal player. I personally would love to see that happen, because maybe that helps us over here on the LMLS. Whether he goes or not, that's I don't know. It'll be interesting. I haven't heard any. It's so soon. I haven't heard many other names floated yet. I don't know if you have.
No, I really haven't been paying too much attention to Arsenal other than to watch my beloved Manchester United defeat Arsenal over the weekend. but I would really like it to be Tata Martino or Patrick Vieira for obvious reasons.
Well, here's my plan. It's Vieira goes to Arsenal, and then Tata goes to coach the men's national team, U.S. men's national team, so that we take care of both of them that way.
Yeah, that works for me.
Yeah.
I like it. That's using the old noodle, Dave.
You know, occasionally I come up with something okay.
Occasionally.
Yeah, I'm not getting a big head, trust me.
All right. Lee has a second question that I can't help him with yet, but I think I will be able to soon. But you can help him with this question, Dave.
Oh, okay.
It is, can you give him a spoiler-free review of the Avengers Infinity War?
Okay, so I am I'm in my 40s. And I've seen a lot of movies. I saw Star Wars when it was in the theaters, to give everybody a point of reference here. And Infinity War is absolutely one of the best movies I've ever seen in the theater, without a doubt. Staying spoiler free, you will not be disappointed. As a matter of fact, you will want to go pay more money to see it again. And they do a good job of incorporating all the myriad of players that they're bringing into that movie without having them step on each other or feel that, you know, anybody is too rushed or that they didn't get quite enough time. They did a really excellent job. And something I heard today is they actually brought in the directors from the other individual movies. So, for example, they brought in James Gunn to help with the voices or, you know, the writing voices for Star-Lord or Rocket. You know, they brought in the guy who did Ant-Man so that – well, actually, Ant-Man wasn't in there. What was the other one I was thinking of? What they were able to do was keep the voices the guy who did Thor Ragnarok brought him in so that the Thor stayed consistent. They were able to do that, and it enhances the movie. There are so many stand up and cheer points in it that I'm probably going to go see it. Well, I'll probably be in the theater while you guys are listening to this podcast because I'm going to go see it again.
Yes, I hope to be able to see it very, very soon, potentially as early as mañana or as something drops.
I hope you do, too, because this not talking to you about it is killing me.
Well, you know, the other thing, too, is that every day that I don't see it, it's like I'm risking spoilers. I'm risking, the hype getting to me to the point where I don't enjoy it as much as I would ordinarily have enjoyed it. I think that happened a little bit to me for Black Panther. I think it was a good movie, a very good movie. But I think the fact that everybody just raved and raved and raved about it made me, like, expect more. Even though there was a lot there, I expected more. You know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying, and this is not going to help, but it's a better movie than Black Panther. So we actually, at work today, we've all seen it, and we actually ranked our Marvel movies. And for most of us, this one was number one. Winter Soldier was number two, and then after that, you know, things started getting shuffled up. Uh-huh. But if you were a fan of Winter Soldier, which I am, which had been my number one movie, even after Black Panther, even after Guardians 2, even after Ragnarok, Winter Soldier had remained number one for years. This took its place.
All right. So thanks, Lee, for those questions. Appreciate it. We have a question on the Twitters from Elder Gorilla, who would like to know what you think the ideal starting 11 lineup for the U.S. Open Cup for Orlando City would be.
Well, let's see. You know, we'll start Bendik and goal. At the moment, you know, we've only really got the two center backs, so Tarek and Sonny will be in there. RJ Allen and Muhammad El-Monir. You know, as I'm going through, I'm not thinking of too many, at least in the back, I'm not thinking of too many things that we're going to change. When we get into the midfield, then we have plenty of more pieces. Maybe there, you definitely have, Will Johnson starting. Perhaps you bring in Yuri Rozell to get him, more time on the field. You definitely, will have a Pino up top so that he can get some more time. And maybe you have Mueller up there as well. I know I'm probably way off on my 11 count here because I'm kind of skipping around. But
So you're basically saying that your ideal starting 11 for US Open Cup is your regular starting 11.
Well, no, the problem is that not the problem. The good thing is that we've actually seen, because of how the season started, we've actually seen some of these guys, RAB on the field. So the people that, I think would come in that we're not used to seeing, you'll have Pino starting. You'll have, I know Will Johnson's been out there, but I still think, Will is out there. I'm trying to think of who else we have on the bench. Let's see.
Well, Richie Larea is a guy that comes to mind. Here's the thing about it, though, Dave. It couldn't be a worse time for the first U.S. Open Cup date, because I believe that would be around June 6th, which is Wednesday, the 6th of June. It could be the 5th, potentially, on the Tuesday, like they did. I think they did last year. They moved it up to a Tuesday to keep it away from the trip, which, again, would be a problem because that is a bad scheduling month for Orlando City. The team on the 2nd, Saturday the 2nd, plays a night game at New York City FC. Then you're talking about either playing Tuesday or Wednesday night and then going to Vancouver for a Saturday game. Vancouver, all the way across, couldn't go further in the league. That is a rough, rough thing. And then, of course, the week, that's also a short week because Vancouver on the 9th, then the Wednesday the 13th at Montreal, again on the road in Canada. So that is a brutal, brutal stretch. And then, then the team gets 10 days before they play Montreal at home. And then they go to Atlanta the week after that. So June is a pain in the nuts, really.
Well,
not a good stretch right there. Now you throw in a U.S. Open Cup date in the middle of two road games, one of which is going to Vancouver. And I'm sure the team would love to leave Thursday and not Friday to go all the way to Vancouver.
Right. So, well, the good news is that the people who have been wanting to see Pierre da Silva will get to see him. The people who have wanted to see the headband, Dylan Powers out there, they'll get to see him. There's going to be guys, PC, like I said, Pino, Donny Toya. There are guys out there. And if, like you say, the schedule's that bad, we can see a mix of all of those guys, not just an Open Cup, but getting some time in the regular MLS games as well.
A lot of it really depends on who's available. Number two, because between now and then there could be injuries and that kind of thing.
Sure.
Number two, who the opponent is. If it's an opponent that Jason Christ would like to roll the dice and say, I think I can get a result with this team rather than go with major players. That might be something that he does. If it's Miami FC of last year is not the Miami of this year. So if you're playing the same team, you're not playing the same roster of players. You're not playing the same quality of team.
Although Stefano Pino might still be on the field.
Yeah, he could be on the field. I definitely think it might be the only opportunity to see Jose Villarreal this year. He's still alive. He's still a guy on this team. a guy like Chris Schuler could play in that game.
Sure.
Larea, Da Silva, these are guys that we could see. Powers is a guy we could see. Rocha is a guy we could see. But the problem is if you throw too many of those bodies out there and lose, it's really bad.
Yeah.
So you have to try to balance that with at least a few regulars. Depending on what happens between now and then, maybe Chris Mueller gets a half a game off at New York City and plays in that game. That's a possibility. But they're, you know, and a guy who's not getting a lot of minutes right now, Josue Coleman.
That, good point.
So he's a guy that you could see in that game. I don't know what my ideal lineup would be for that game. My ideal lineup is our starting lineup. But
right,
I don't.
Yeah.
But that's not going to happen, especially if it's June 6th, which is when I think it is. I believe that if that's the week, I think that Orlando City will try to move that up to the 5th to get that extra day in before having to leave for Vancouver. That's what I sort of envision if it's that week, and I'm pretty sure it's that week as I looked it up. So anyway,
the main point is you're going to get to see a lot of guys that you haven't seen.
Yeah, Open Cup will start for a lot of teams this weekend, not for MLS teams, but we'll start to see teams that you've actually heard of playing this weekend. There'll be FC Miami City against Miami FC in one of those matches.
Miami has scored on Miami and Miami.
Yeah, that's going to be a crazy hard game for the announcers. And I haven't looked at the rosters, but hopefully there's a lot of Hernandezes and Diazes and stuff.
And an absolutely impossible game to
couple
call.
A couple, couple of Johnsons or Smiths out there, maybe.
Oh, so, God, I could. Yeah. One can only hope.
Anybody even listening to the game would be confused.
Yeah, you'll have to watch it. You will not be able to listen to that one on the radio because not only will you have to watch it, you better have your computer up with, you know, roster lists and all that. Okay, which Johnson was that?
Exactly. Anyway, that's all of the email that I've seen, the Twitter requests I've seen, and we forgot to tell you how to get your questions in to ask us anything, and you can do that, obviously, by email, themainland@gmail.com, or hit us up on Twitter. We are @themainland on Twitter, and you can hit us up with the hashtag AskTMLPC, and that will get us your questions. Get your questions in for next week. It's never too early. We'll answer anything. And please be sure to spell Maine, M-A-N-E, like a lion's mane in both of those situations.
Because we're clever.
Yes, we're very punny guys here at the mainland. Anyway, Dave, we've got a game coming up this weekend at Orlando City Stadium against Real Salt Lake, the former club of Will Johnson, the former club of Jason Kreiss. I need your key matchup, and I need your score prediction.
All right. Key matchup it's kind of weird. I think we simply need to keep scoring. You know, they do have Nick Raimondo. He is an excellent goalie. You know, their defense is pretty good. It's this weird thing for me that a lot of the squad for Orlando has started coming together. You know, all the pieces have sort of come together. You know, that's what happens in a 5-game win streak. So it's hard to point, you know, at a deficiency right now. So what I go back to is you're coming back home. You know, yeah, we were able to come from behind to get the victory out in Colorado, but I still think it's a good thing to get on the board early and often. So I look for the offense to get moving, you know, either Dom or Chris to get back on the scoreboard, hopefully for Justin Merrim to get on the scoreboard. Anyway, you know, let's get some goals. Let's take charge of the game. Early, we'll be back among all the oxygen molecules that permeate the Florida air and sunshine. So, yeah, it's going to be just the midfield doing what they've been doing, which is getting service in for the forwards, letting the strikers do what they do. But it's going to come down to making sure that we convert on those chances. As far as my prediction goes, boy, I was thinking about this all day, and it's one of those things where I want to predict a win. I feel, you know, part of me feels like, you know, this could easily be 3-1. This is a Real team that's seems to be up and down. But at the end of the day, I'm going to go again with a 1-1 draw just because we can't have nice things, and this nice little run has to end at some point. So I'm going to hopefully be wrong, say that it ends this weekend, and somehow we let one in, but we're able to score one.
All right. I expect a little more optimism out of you, actually.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. I'm. It's kind of a like five in a row. I don't want to jinx it.
Well, you know, the key is that you know, you have nothing to do with this.
That's a good point. The other good point is no matter what we predict, we're wrong. So it won't be 1-1.
Yeah. So for me, there's two big matchups that are key to this game. One is not on the field at all. It is the key matchup. Number one is Orlando City against looking ahead to Atlanta United.
Okay, that's good.
That is number one. You have to play the team in front of you because anybody in this league can beat anybody in this league if the, you know, if the circumstances are correct and if you don't show up ready to go. And you know, it's so tempting to look ahead to Atlanta because they are, yes, you know, you're trying to prove yourself in the East and they are one of the top teams in the conference. So it's so easy to look ahead and start eyeing that that team with the ugly stripes. But on the pitch, I will say that to me, there is the big player that I think that Orlando City needs to look out for is there's really two. So I'm going to just say that the key matchup is the back line of Orlando City against João Plata and Albert Rusnak. Okay. Those two players in particular are very dangerous. They tend to generate some scoring chances and some shots and get some key passes into the area. It's going to be key to play well against them. And it sounds weird because they're coming off a shutout loss and they haven't won a road game yet. But I think those still are some dangerous players that you have to watch out for. And you can even throw Jefferson Savarino in there. He's a player that had 5 shots last week at Vancouver. So they generated plenty of shots. I think between Savarino and Plata and Rusnak, they had those three alone had 11 shots combined. So that's a lot of attempts. You know, it's not like it's the best team in the league when they're playing Vancouver, but it was on the road. So that's still pretty good amount of attempts just for a trio of players.
Yeah, and you know, they've beaten Vancouver, they lost to Vancouver, they've blanked Colorado, but then they've gotten blanked by New York. These guys are all over the place. And so that's what makes it so difficult. You know, will the Real Salt Lake stand up?
Yeah, it's hard to say. For this one is a really tough one for me to decide because Orlando City doesn't have a good history against them in terms of wins. They have one victory, and that was last year, a 1-0 victory at Rio Tinto. And that was a game that really kind of Orlando City made the most of an early chance with a Will Johnson goal and then just kind of hung on.
Yeah.
The other two games here have been draws, the 1-1 at Rio Tinto and the 2-2 here. Of course, very memorable. Two-goal comeback went for Orlando City, coming back to draw both goals in stoppage time. There's been some red cards in the past in this series. Yeah, like you, it's kind of hard to continue to pick a team to win when they're on a streak, because at some point you figure all good things come to an end. I'm going to say 2-2. I think Orlando's in a pretty good offensive spot right now. But I do worry about those players that I mentioned earlier. I think Plata is a good player. I think that Rusnak's a good player. I believe he's a designated player for them. Savarino is a guy who can get into space. And we've seen some players in the last few weeks be able to kind of slip in between the defense. And I think that Real Salt Lake is a team that they can do two things. They can play balls over the top, and they can slide in between. And I think with a guy like Kyle Beckerman, who you know is a rock in the back, you don't worry about guys getting forward and getting numbers forward because you got essentially 5 defenders when you've got him on the field. So you know, that makes them a dangerous team, and they've had success getting opportunities against Orlando City in the past. This is a different team But until Justin Merrim starts firing on all cylinders, and he's playing better and better every week, I still think that this team hasn't reached its full potential. So I think I'm comfortable saying 2-2 just because there's this a history of draws in this series. And again, it's like if I pick them to win and they don't win, then I feel like it's my fault that they didn't keep winning.
We have nothing to do with
right.
it whatsoever.
That's right.
What's,
it's completely irrational.
Oh, yeah, completely and totally irrational. But what's funny is when they weren't winning to begin the season, you wouldn't pick them until they proved they could win. And now they've won five in a row. And you're like, yeah, no, you can't keep it up.
That's true.
I understand why. I'm not disagreeing with you.
No, I know. It's true. It is totally a double standard.
Absolutely.
But I'm considering the opponent. If we're, you know, if this team were playing DC or somebody like that, they've had some success against in the past, especially at home, I would say, okay. And I would pick them to win and say, yeah, they'll get six in a row. And this is a game, Dave, that they should win this game. They should win it.
Absolutely should. And like I said, my first thought earlier was 3-1, but I went with 1-1. So, I mean, I'm just as hypocritical about this as you are.
Yeah, the team still leaves too many goals unscored, I think, Orlando City does. And that can come back to haunt you at any given time. And it felt really weird having an Orlando City game with Dom Dwyer on the field without Dom scoring a goal. And that didn't happen prior to that this season. So
I guess he didn't want to.
When you talk about guys that, you know, streaky players like Dom Dwyer, and he was in such a hot streak, is he going to go into a cold streak now?
You know what? You could say that about anybody. I think that the way Dom plays is such a raw, scrappy, you know, does whatever he has to, that I don't think he changed how he played. I think it was just, you know, a lack of opportunity, lack of, you know, he got undercut. I mean, he should have had that goal there. So, I don't, you know, I'll put it this way. These guys are professionals, and yeah, there is such a thing as the yips, but I don't know. I think they're playing with confidence.
I don't even think it's yips. I think that it's just the Dom has shown throughout his career that he'll score a ton of goals over a stretch of time, and then he'll go into a little bit of a cold spell, and then he'll come back and get hot again. And that's not a Dom thing. That's a striker thing in general. So
that's true. But fortunately, we've got other guys that can score. So.
So anyway, that's my official prediction is 2-2. I hope that the defense plays better than that for Orlando City. I don't know. It's just the number that comes to me. It's weird that I think about the games and I think about who should win and who shouldn't, and I look at their recent streaks, and you know, mm-hmm. I look at the fact that RSL doesn't have a road win, and yet still what I go with is a gut number that just pops in. You know, I go, what feels right, you know?
And we are consistently wrong.
Yeah. So why am I listening to my gut?
I don't know.
Anyway, we'll see how it shakes out this week. And next week, I'll try a new approach. If the gut continues to be just hilariously wrong, I'll just try another method.
If we might actually use data and facts to come up with a reasonable thing that has nothing to do with our guts.
Yeah. Well, I've always tried to be honest how I've felt about games. And not necessarily, sure. It's not always rational. Sometimes I'll look at it and go, wow, you know, this team is garbage and this team's really great. And it'll seem easy to make a call. And then I'll go, and then something inside me will go, wait a minute, that's a trap.
It's a trap.
And this is one of those games. This is one of those games where I feel like the
Sure, right before Atlanta, off of a five-game win streak. Yeah, absolutely. It's a trap game.
The directions of these teams seems just too convenient, you know. But as you said, we can't have nice things. I don't know. I'll be disappointed if Orlando City doesn't win this game, but it also depends on how things unfold. I mean, there's things that you can't account for, like penalties and red cards and things like that. So some strange things have happened in this series. Some guys have gotten sent off. You know, there've been just some odd happenings, and there've been, you know, like I said, two draws out of the three games and not a lot of goals for Orlando City, but I feel like they can get two on RSL, and I feel like they're perfectly capable of shipping two.
Well, regardless of what happens, we'll be here to tell you about it.
That's right. We'll be back next week. We'll talk about you know, Real Salt Lake at Orlando City before the Atlanta United game. We'll preview that, obviously, next week. We'll talk about the Pride and the Red Stars, and we'll look ahead to the Pride's next opponent coming up, which will also be on a Wednesday, and that will be at Utah. So speaking of Rio Tinto, the first trip for the Pride out to Rio Tinto. And, you know, we'll have a lot to talk about. And you know, if you're listening to this on Wednesday, the 2nd of May, when it drops, happy birthday to Miles Joseph, who has been on the podcast.
Absolutely.
All right, Dave, we'll wrap up episode number 123. I hope I got that right. I didn't look it up this week. I was just that confident. Actually, I'm looking at it now. Yes, this is a 123. Thanks again to Kyle Martino for being with us on this edition of the Mainland Podcast. Please read our stuff at themainland.com. Follow us on Twitter, like our Facebook page, all of that. Subscribe to this podcast if you are just listening to it and downloading it and haven't subscribed. Please do that and tell your friends about it. Leave us a 5-star review and say some nice things, and if you do that, we'll read it on the air. This is I think week 50 in a row where nobody has done that.
We want to read your reviews, somebody please.
Yeah, sometimes it's just nice to, maybe people don't want to hear us tooting our own horn, so maybe they're like purposely not leaving a 5-star review.
Okay, leave the 5-star review, write something, and if you don't want us to read it out, say, please don't read this out. Otherwise, we'll read it out, but just, you know, it would be nice for us to hear something.
Yeah, that'd be good. So let us know what you're thinking. Tell your friends and family about us, and we will be back to do this all again next week. And so, Dave, tell everybody where they can find you on the Twitter.
I am on the Twitters at DEVEROHE. That's Deve Rowe. And of course, you can find my writings on themainland.com. And Michael, for you?
I am at Mainland Michael on Twitter. Main, like a lion's mane, MaineLand Michael. All one continuous blob, amorphous blob of letters after the at symbol on Twitter. And of course, you can find me here on the Mainland Podcast and on themainland.com as well. So that will do it. We'll have full coverage of Orlando City against Real Salt Lake this weekend. I will be on hand to cover that match. And we'll do the typical thing, Dave. We'll have the recap. We'll have the great player grades, man of the match. We'll have, 5 takeaways. Maybe we'll have a photo gallery from that thing. And it'll all be good. We'll be back to talk about it all next week.
That's what we do.
All right. On behalf of David Rowe, I am Michael Citro, founder and managing editor of themainland.com, signing off the way I always do by saying, go City and go Pride.